Parent Entrepreneur Power, conversation number 187.
Parent Entrepreneur Power.
Wait, what?
This is the podcast for parents juggling the tough choices required for success in business while putting family first. Hi, I'm Mary Catherine Johnson, and I share the ups and downs and dirty truths of profits and potty training while chatting with successful parent entrepreneurs from all walks of life. Are you powered up? Hey there, Power Parents. Guess who? Mary Catherine Johnson, as we start every single conversation. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much. I don't think I've said that recently. Thank you so much for your time, your attention, and just listening in on these amazing conversations that I get to have, that I am so privileged to have. And today's will be no different. I get to chat with Isaac Morehouse. He is the founder of Practice is Perfect. And hey there, Isaac, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I am fan-stinking-tastic. It's a gorgeous day. You know, how could it be anything else? I got to wake up today. So it's, you know, it's fantastic. Everything's great from there.
I hear you. It's kind of the way you choose to approach the day when you first get out of bed sets the tone for everything. So you seem like you chose the right outlook.
Otherwise, I don't think I'd be here. I don't think I'd have the strength or the ability or the attitude to actually be able to talk to people all day, every day. So, all right. So we start this conversation the same place every time. And that is your once upon a time story. And I call it that because really, all of us have a story. All of us have a once upon a time. Once upon a time, we were childless. Once upon a time, we didn't have the stresses and the joys of entrepreneurship. So tell us your story. How did you get into this whole parent entrepreneur gig?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of did everything backwards.
Love that.
Or in an unusual way. So, I grew up, I was homeschooled, and I always had a lot of independence as a kid. And I got married very young. I went to college, finished college very young at 19. I got married right before I turned 20. My wife was 22. And we were not trying to have kids right away. We were going to wait a few years. But surprise, we got pregnant and we had my son. I was just 21.
Gosh.
And, yeah. And so we have my son and we're like, all right, well, let's just have, you know, let's have like four or five kids. We wanted like four or five kids. Let's just have them all right in a row. We'll be young. Goodness. We'll have them close. Well, we couldn't get pregnant for 5 years. And so we decided, okay, well, we'll adopt. This is something we've thought about. We decided we're going to adopt, and we tried a lot of stuff and we just figured we'd never get pregnant again. So we adopted and, a baby girl. And then, 9 months later we got pregnant. And with another girl. And then we figured once again, we probably would not, because that was totally unexpected. We didn't even think we'd be able to get pregnant. And so we weren't planning on having any more kids. And fast forward 5 years from there, and we, surprise, we're pregnant again and had just had a baby boy. He's 3 months old now. So I have a 12-year-old son, a 7-year-old daughter who's adopted, a 6-year-old daughter who's biological, and then a 3-month-old son that we just had. Yeah. So there's the parenting side of it. So, you know, I get started really young. I mean, I kind of did everything, you know, younger for my age. I had older siblings. And as I said, I had a lot of independence, was homeschooled. So I didn't think it was like that weird. I'm ready to get married. I'm ready to buy a house. You know, I had a mortgage and a wife and a college degree, and we were pregnant for a kid when I was, you know, by age 20. So I was like kind of early in all that stuff, but, you know, making like no money, scrapping along, being, you know, real poor. And I just kind of pursued a career of things that were interesting to me. I thought, you know, oh, I want to sort of change the world, maybe politics. So I thought politics was the way to go. And I got involved I worked for the state legislature in Michigan. And I realized real quickly that politics is not the way to change the world. They're followers, not leaders. They're a lagging indicator of where the world is going. And so I want to get out of politics. I didn't want it to sort of corrupt my soul. And it didn't seem that like the place I wanted to build a future. So I got involved in some nonprofits doing educational work. And I kind of, you know, I always had this like, do things that are interesting to me and don't do things that are boring. That was like my only rule. And as I went along, I spent about 10 years more or less working with a lot of high school and college students in various capacities at a couple different nonprofits. You know, I did some teaching and speaking, and then I did fundraising for a nonprofit where I'm meeting with a lot of business owners and people who've self-made wealth, entrepreneurs. And all the young people were telling me there's no jobs. I have degrees, I have debt, there's no jobs. And all these business owners were telling me I'm hiring all the time and I can't find any talent.
There's no talent.
Yes. So I thought something is amiss. And so I had this idea for Praxis is the name of the company, but Practice Makes Perfect isn't a bad name either. But for Praxis, which is a startup apprenticeship program. So young people come in, we put them through a 6-month boot camp, virtual boot camp, where they're sort of learning all the things necessary to succeed in the professional world. And then we place them with a startup where they have a paid apprenticeship for 6 months. And they almost always get hired afterwards full time. And most of them are doing this instead of college. So you've got 18, 19, 20 year olds, no degree, getting hired $50,000 a year right out of this program at startups, doing work in sales and marketing and things like that. And so that was sort of the vision. And I had, I'm sorry, I'm rambling on this story a little bit, but I had the, here's the crux of it. I had this great life. I had moved with my family to Charleston, South Carolina, where I live now, because we just thought it was beautiful. We wanted to live here. I was working a job that I loved, doing fundraising for an organization I believed in. I had a ton of autonomy. I was making really great money, had a flexible schedule, was working from home and traveling, and everything should have been great. But I was like restless. I had this itch. And I had never, you know, my brother and I had tried a business when I was like 19, but nothing really major. I'd never really thought of myself as like an entrepreneur, sort of entrepreneurial as a worker at different jobs. But I had this kind of itch to do something. I thought this is, my life is too comfortable. It's too easy. My job has become, I'm pretty good at it. It's not a challenge. And like, I want more. And I had this idea for Praxis, and I knew I had to do it. I knew I had to do it. It was just like, I know you said this is an analogy you use on your show. It was just like when you first find out that you're pregnant. There's this inevitability about it. Like, this baby is going to be born. And I had, like, this company, as soon as I had the idea, it was like I was pregnant with this idea. Like, it's coming into the world. You know, like, gosh, I've got to act on this. And so the real moment of truth, I asked my wife, I pitched her the whole thing, how excited I was. And I said, look, I want to do this no matter what it takes. But I don't want to do it if you're not 100% on board, because I don't want to just persuade you and cajole you to say, OK, fine, let's do this. And then later, you know, you'll hold it against me and be like, why did you convince me to do this? This is terrible. I said, because I can't promise you the result. We might end up living in my mom's basement. I might be working all the time, totally stressed. I don't know. But all I know is I want to do it. I want to make it happen. And I can't do it unless you're 100% with me. She said, OK. I said, take the time you need to think about it and let me know. And don't say yes just for me. Really think about it. She said, OK. 2 weeks went by, and I, like, to me,
excruciating.
And I told myself I wouldn't harass her about it, and I didn't. And it was so hard. After 2 weeks, she says, "Okay, let's do this. I'm in."
That's when I
went after it. So I guess that's my once upon a time story.
Oh my goodness. All right, Power Parents, you know I'm all over this one. There are so many directions we could go. Okay, so and all of them really are. You know, I got to start off by saying, Isaac, I got married around the same time you did, not the same year, that's for sure. I'm quite a bit older than you, but same thing. I was 19, almost 20. My first boyfriend, right? We've been going out since we were both 16, and we're still married 34 years later. I can't even tell you how excited I am to take this so many different directions. Two things, and I'm going to say them so that I don't forget them. And number one, my 18-year-old, almost 19-year-old, he's going to be 19 in just a couple of weeks. He is kind of wondering what he's going to do and looking at the different majors. He's in college. He's starting his sophomore year. Everything's, you know, going together, but there's no passion for a thing. Okay. And he's doing a lot of things for me, and he's starting his own business. So we could totally go that direction of exactly what you do for people. I really want to explore that. Number one. Number two, I love how you got this idea, and you're exactly right. We birth it. We envision that this is going to happen, and these businesses that we come up with, especially after we have kids, right? We totally recognize those signs that we are compelled to do this, and it's going to happen, and we can envision them coming into the world, even though those visions are totally nowhere near how they actually end up, right? Just like our kids, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, that right there, I have to tell you one thing that I'm doing right now. I'm in the middle of writing a book, and the book is about the messages we receive. And that was basically a message you received, and you chose to reply. You chose to grab onto it. Instead of allowing fear, which most of us have a lot of that, right? I mean, rightfully so. Like you said, I don't know if we're going to end up in my mom's basement. I don't know if we're going to be successful. I don't know. But you didn't let that I don't know turn into, we can't do that. You took that and you ran with it. And I'm sure there were many messages that you got after you made that decision. Number one, your wife gave you a very clear one when she said, yes, we can do it. And then probably many, many more. So, okay, let's start. And how long ago was that? Let's start with the business practice.
So, about 4 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So you had that idea. Where do you find your startups?
So the companies that we partner with for our apprenticeships.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when we started, I don't know if you're familiar with the children's book, Stone Soup.
No,
I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's a story where there's these guys who are really hungry, and they walk into this town and they go knocking on everyone's door asking, you know, can you loan us some food? And everybody says, no, we barely have enough. No, we can't loan you any food. And they say, all right. So what we're going to do, we're going to make stone soup. And then all the villagers are really interested. They say, bring us a big pot. And somebody brings them a pot. Okay, bring us a stone. They bring a stone. All right, let's fill this with water. And we're going to make stone soup. They're like, how are they going to turn, you know, a stone into soup? This is amazing. I have to know. And they're like, okay, they're letting it boil. You know what would make this really good? If we had some carrots. Somebody's like, oh, I'll bring some carrots. You know what would make this good? If we had some potatoes, right? And eventually they've got everybody's so excited to see stone soup that they're bringing all the ingredients. At the end, they have a big feast. Everybody eats. Everybody's happy. And this idea of selling a vision before you even have the ability to deliver on it, as a way to get the means you need to deliver on it. That's kind of what I take away from that story. Wow. And that's kind of what I had to do. So I had a small network of small businesses, maybe one or two would actually be considered startups. People that I just sort of knew were like, hey, you know, a guy who owns a business, would he be interested in taking on an apprentice? Oh, hey, do you know anyone else? And so I had maybe 20 companies who had said, yeah, that theoretically, like I'd be interested in somebody if it was somebody good and whatever. Like, okay. So I said, great, I'm listing you as a business partner. So I'm like, we have this program, we have, you know, apprenticeships, we're going to send you to a great company and you're going to have an amazing experience. I knew that I could deliver on that if I had the demand and if I had customers applying and coming in, then I could take that and go to companies and say, look, I've got these young people, right? And so it was like a catch-22, like you kind of need the people to prove it to the company. And so I just said, I'm confident enough in my ability to deliver a delicious soup that everyone's going to be happy with. So I've got to kind of sell it before I actually have it. So I had a real loose number just kind of on hand of businesses. But once we actually started to get applications, once we started to get real quality young people into the program, now I had something tangible I could go talk to businesses with. And then once we placed a few and they would say, oh, this person was an awesome apprentice, this was great, send me more, or hey, you should talk to my friend who owns this other business, then it became a lot easier. So it was basically, you know, individual word of mouth. And the business side has always been relatively easy. Like getting businesses to host our apprentices is not very hard because they're so hungry for talent. That's rarely the constraint. The constraint is usually just how do we grow the pipeline of young people coming into the program? That requires more of a marketing effort than it does to go to the business side, if you will.
Wow. Okay. So the people, so it sounds like obviously if you're in business, you make money. So the place you make money, your customer, is actually the young person.
Absolutely. So they pay tuition for the program and they go through the 6-month boot camp and then they go to the apprenticeship, which is paid, and they end up earning a little bit more than what they pay in tuition. So sort of the net cost of the program to the participant is zero. Because they
within
pay us
what time frame?
A year, 6-month boot camp, 6-month apprenticeship.
Wow. Okay. So within that year, they've shelled out a certain amount of money and gotten that back.
Yep.
Wow. And so what do you, okay, this is amazing. I love this idea. Okay. So what do you, you mentioned sales and marketing, you mentioned those kinds of things. In that 6-month boot camp, what do you, are you basically, it sounds like, replacing a college education, but in a specific niche, a specific skill set. So I can imagine that you have an application to find out the, I have to stop myself from asking the question and finish saying it because I'm getting so excited. Okay. So do you have an application. So you're looking for certain aptitude or ability or attitude, and mm-hmm. then you train them based on what aptitude, attitude, and ability they've applied with, and probably a conversation, interview kind of situation. So first off, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We focus on, I would say, non-technical positions at startups. So not coders and, you know, people with programming skills, but things that are more generalist roles like entry level sales, marketing, operations, you know, sometimes graphic design or data analytics if people do have those skills. But we tend to get people who are, it's all about the attitude. They have what I call forward tilt. They're almost literally physically leaning forward. They're so eager about opportunities. They have the work ethic and the drive, and they're self-motivated. Lack of skills or experience is not that big of a deal if the mindset and the attitude is right. So we screen for that, and it's really competitive. Only about 15% of applicants end up getting accepted into the program. And I don't say that to like that's a bragging point. I want to accept as many people as possible, but we just know it's like a fitness trainer for your career. And if you go to a fitness trainer and say, "Yeah, my mom told me to come here so I can get in shape. Can you make me in shape?" Like we can't do anything.
No,
you know, like I'm not going to rip you off and take your money if I know I can't deliver. And I need people that have commitment. So that's what we screen for. And then in the boot camp, you know, what we've realized is that the thing that is necessary, there's two things necessary to succeed in the market. One is the ability to create value for other people. And two is the ability to prove that to them. And that's really it. So whatever it is that you do that's valuable to others, you've got to be able to have something you can do that's valuable to others, and you've got to be able to prove it to them. And so the boot camp is really all about saying, okay, you've got skills and traits and attributes, and maybe you're not even familiar with it. Maybe you don't even realize how good you would be at sales or at, you know, copywriting, but we want to help you figure out what it is that you can do that's valuable to others. And then it's all like project-based about building ways to tangibly demonstrate to people that ability. Because if you just list on a resume, studied marketing or good with people, that doesn't tell me anything as an employer. But if you can say, here, I built this landing page and we had a 10% conversion rate, and here's the email drip campaign that I built in MailChimp that came along with it. Now you're showing me something tangible that you've done, a demonstration of your ability. And so they build a series of what we call them portfolio projects. They build a pitch deck, a personal pitch deck, a personal website. They kind of, you know, they do a challenge where they blog every day for 30 days to learn how to sort of get improve their writing, to learn to turn creativity into a discipline instead of something you just sort of wait for inspiration to start, to strike, to learn to ship things even when they're not comfortable with it. And so by the time they're done with this boot camp, they've got, you know, a really nice personal website, social media presence, at least 30 blog posts on there, a handful of projects that demonstrate their ability in a specific area or something they've learned, a 1-minute video elevator pitch, this personal pitch deck, et cetera. And so they can take that and shop them to our business partners and say, hey, you've got an open role in a sales development. Here are 3 people we think would be a great fit. They take a look at their stuff. They say, oh, I want to interview, you know, 2 of them. And, you know, we shop them around and we get them placed at one of these apprenticeships where they go work for the next six months.
Wow. That's fantastic. Okay. So my question that I was going to ask beyond me stating that, it was, do you do any kind of personality profiles in addition to your interviews and looking at previous skill sets?
Kind of. We don't use like Myers-Briggs or, you know, any other preset ones, but we kind of have our own internal rubric that helps us identify, you know, introvert, extrovert, action bias, analysis bias, to help us figure out what kind of people are going to succeed in the program, but especially because there's a lot of different personality types that can succeed in the program if you have the drive, what kind of roles are going to be a good fit for them. And the thing that's nice about the boot camp too is that, so participants have one-on-one coaching sessions with Praxis advisors. We also have a community where they're interacting all the time on a platform called Workplace. Where we've got, you know, group discussions, and we've got weekly sessions with different experts that come in, and we do these Zoom meetings. And so we have a lot of opportunity to interact with the participants, with each other, with our advisors, and to really kind of tease out those things in a real world context to be able to see how people sort of respond to the different projects and challenges. Mm-hmm. And that helps us get a, and really asking them to create their personal pitch deck and tell their story as well is really helpful.
Yeah.
Not only in helping us identify, but more importantly, helping them identify their own personality traits and attributes. That self-knowledge is really key.
Wow. That's amazing. Yes, it is, absolutely is. That self-analysis, self-awareness, all those things are absolutely key. And at such a young age, that's really hard to find.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all come from our own stuff with our family. No matter how great your family is, you come with a certain role, you come with your own stuff. And I mean, that's kind of my goal. I want to definitely, when I was younger, and we waited a long time to have kids, not like you, but we specifically waited. And I, one of the reasons was try to get rid of most of my stuff, but I knew I wasn't gonna be able to get rid of it all. I mean, I've got to give my kids something they can say to a psychologist sometime. Otherwise I haven't done them a service, right? They don't have anything to work on, right? They've got to work on something.
Exactly.
That's what life's about. So, wow, that is incredible. You know, the, okay. So again, a little bit selfish here for two reasons. Number one, my oldest son. And also number two, I'm going to probably need some of your people here pretty soon.
All right.
We'll talk offline for that, or off mic for that. Oh my gosh. I am so how did you, okay. So you got this idea and you're kind of calling it an apprenticeship because it kind of is, but they're actually hired.
Yeah. They're working, you know, full time. And we frame it as an apprenticeship because the business partners basically are agreeing to this 6-month period where the employees there working for $15 an hour. So it's a, you know, it's less than maybe many entry level employees. But it's a serious amount. So it's not like an internship where it's like, oh, sure, go make some coffee. You know, they're actually doing real work, but it's deliberately seen as a 6-month basically trial run to say, okay, we know you have enough value for us to take a chance on you for 6 months and help you learn some stuff. And, you know, we know that since you're in this program, you're also getting ongoing training and help during this 6 months to help sort of make you better along the way. And by the end of that 6 months, you basically get a chance to prove whether you're worth bringing on full time. And thus far, 98% of our grads have been hired full time.
After the 6-month period.
Yeah.
Wow. In the last 4 years?
Yeah. At an average salary of just over 50,000.
Oh, and
their
my
age
Lord.
Is like 21. No, almost none of them have college degrees either.
Oh, my goodness. That is incredible. That is absolutely incredible. And I am so excited because, you know, our current culture, I mean, everybody go to college. And college isn't right for everyone. Absolutely not. The experience, definitely. You know, how many people out there are actually working in the field in which their degree was based,
right?
Very, very few, unless you're hopefully a lawyer who stayed a lawyer, or a doctor who stayed a doctor, or like my husband who stayed an accountant and in economics. But not me. I definitely did not stay, and I'm not in the career in which my degree is based. So, wow, what an amazing opportunity. Now, okay, another question. Where do you find the projects for them to do while they're in the boot camp? Do they do them for you? Do they just make them up? Do you have companies that you can maybe outsource to? Are they becoming, you know, contractors and, you know, putting out their services for that? I mean, where do you find those projects?
Yeah. So typically the projects are, typically they're just sort of for, by and for the participant. Occasionally they might be something that they're doing for pay for someone. And when they're able to do that, that's awesome. That's a huge, huge bonus. But we kind of define there's two types of projects. We're real big on project-based learning. There's a project that will help you learn something and a project that will help demonstrate something you know. And often a project can do both things. So, you know, an example of the first might be, okay, I really want to learn, programming language. I want to learn JavaScript. So I'm going to, rather than just consume information about it, like watch videos about it or read about it, I'm going to actually build something using this language. So we usually do our projects in 30 days. At the end of this 30 days, I am going to have built the following. Now all the learning is done as an instrument to bring that end about. Because if you don't have a meaningful goal that you actually want to accomplish for yourself, then the knowledge is really useless. But the minute you have something that you want to do and there's certain knowledge required to get it, people can learn actually really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a Spanish-speaking country for a couple weeks and you need to buy food, you will learn Spanish so much faster than if you're required to study it for, you know, 2 years in a classroom, right? So having that learning based around a goal, an outcome, like I want to complete the following. And then the other, you know, sort of use of it is to signal to people your ability. So, you know, like an example I gave before, we've had participants say, pick a product that they like, go opt in to their sales funnel, basically go give their email and then catalog and see if they can reverse engineer their whole sales funnel and sort of diagram. These are the emails that I got. Here's sort of the schedule that they came on. Here's the kind of copy they used. And then I started to see these Facebook ads that were, must've been retargeted to me and to kind of, and then to like diagram that out in say a longer blog post or in a video or something to sort of show the, you know, here's a deconstruction of a sales funnel to demonstrate to someone, oh, you know what a sales funnel is, right? And so we work with the participants to say, what's something that you might be interested in? What's a project that you like? I mean, some have published books and sold them on Amazon. Some have done, you know, like a Kickstarter campaign for a physical product. Some have done some research, market research, and put together a slide deck on it. It's a whole lot of different things. And it's kind of based on what do you think is going to help you learn something you're interested in or help demonstrate to the rest of the world something that you're capable of.
Okay, so Power Parents, hey, listen up to this because, okay, so they all know my, if you've been listening for the last several months, you know that my new gig is Messenger Funnels. So I'm using Facebook Messenger and I am building funnels, communication funnels, sales funnels, engagement funnels for clients, for businesses in Messenger and using basically chatbots. Yep. And with that in mind, I have a Facebook group, a private group called Messenger Hackers. And people come into this group because they're in the bot community. They've either taken a course or they've taken my course on how to do this. And they're in there. And we just ran a challenge, a sales challenge, or actually a client challenge, getting clients. And the number one thing, the number one difference between the people possibly in that challenge, and people did get clients at the end of that challenge, which is only 5 days. So it took them 5 days. I taught them how I do this, you know, a little higher level. Obviously, we didn't get into the weeds about it. But people did get clients at the end. So I definitely helped them do that. But there are many who went through the challenge and at the end were asking me same questions that were covered in every single one of those days. Okay. So it's one thing. First, I think the number one thing that made the difference with that 98% specifically is that you're there to hold them accountable to it. It's not just that they're learning it and they're trying to do it as they learn it, which is basically what this challenge was, right? But someone's holding them accountable to it and they've paid for someone to hold them accountable to it.
Yes.
That is the key to making a real difference.
Yep.
I have to say it.
No, and that was the feeling, that was the insight I had. I remember when I was in college, I had this feeling like, this is so unlike any other consumer experience. I'm paying all this money and I feel like the supposed producer, which is the professors conveying this information, they don't care at all about me, the consumer. There's no direct relationship here because their pay is not determined by my happiness. There's all these third parties. Most people are getting loans and grants and there's tenure and there's so many things in between the person purchasing the good and the person delivering it. I mean, healthcare has become the same way. And so there's no direct accountability. And I thought when we launched Praxis, I want to be directly accountable to our customers. So they are paying us and putting their skin in the game and saying, I put money just like when, if you hire a fitness trainer, I'm paying money to get this result. And so I have a vested interest in making sure I get value out of this program rather than just like, I guess I'll just go along with it. I'll try it. You know, having that skin in the game is so key because that sharpens your focus dramatically. And when participants will say things to us, like when we present, you know, ideas for projects or some of the months have more structure than others, I mentioned, you know, our second month is this 30-day blogging challenge. And some of them will say, I stopped doing it because I don't really think it's that important for me to blog or whatever. And we'll say, okay, we're not going to let you off the hook with that. You don't have to blog every day. Tell me why you think it's unimportant. What do you think would be more important? What are you going to do every day for 30 days? Come up with a better challenge. You tell me, well, I want to do videos on YouTube. I'm not that into writing. Oh, okay. Well, how about you make a video every day for 30 days? Like, break down your goals, and I'm not going to let you get away with, I'm too cool for school, I'm a rebel. Like, no, it's fine. You don't have to do what we suggest, but you have to do something that pushes you. And we're gonna help you dig down and identify, what do you really want to do? Let's build a challenge around that. Let's customize it to you. And sort of calling their bluff, because a lot of times they'll play the rebel card as a way to escape hard work.
Oh yeah.
You know? It's been a lot of fun. There's sort of a heavy coaching component involved with our advisors to kind of de-school their minds, frankly. A lot of young people just kind of have like, just do what the teacher says, do the minimum, follow the rules, obey the rules. And it's like, no, that's not how the real world works. You need to create value, and you can't just follow rules. That's not enough, you know?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Okay. Again, two things. My mind's just going absolutely bonkers here. So two things. Number one, you mentioned about at school, not the professors were not accountable. There were too many steps in between. They're not accountable to anything, let alone your results. Right? Yes. They're only accountable to reaching tenure. And then once they reach tenure, it's done. They can do whatever the heck they want, right? Short of killing you.
Yep.
So, that's number one. And you are obviously accountable to results, because obviously you want that 98% rate, right? You want that 98% success rate or higher if you can get it.
Yeah.
Because how many schools can say anything close to 98% of their students get hired?
Yeah.
Not just pass, not just get the degree.
And it gives us a really nice balance, because we want to maximize revenue. So we want to accept as many people as we can into the program. That's our revenue source. But if we accept a lot of people who just aren't that great, aren't willing to put in the work, and we try to send them to business partners, we either won't be able to get them an apprenticeship, or they'll go and they'll be a dud and it'll burn bridges for us. We always have this constant balance. Our education team, they want everybody, because they're like, we can make everybody better. And our business partner team is like, we need people that have the right qualities that we can make sure we can get them placed and succeed. And it's a healthy tension, because you want that. You want to screen for customers that you can actually help. That actually, the fact that like only half of people who go to college end up graduating, it's almost scandalous to me. Like, again, you can't always prevent this, but to say, let's get all these customers to pay all this money, even customers who frankly shouldn't be here. Like, I don't want to do that. No. You know, I want customers that I know we can help, that I know are capable of finishing and gaining from this program, because I don't want you to come and not benefit from it. That doesn't help me in the long term, you know?
Yeah. And also that it's enough of a challenge for them to really show a growth and a change.
Yes.
And enough of a challenge for you to take, no matter what background they come from, to be able to help them with that.
Yep. And I'll tell you, for people listening, I will tell you a correlation that will probably not surprise any of your listeners.
Go ahead.
Best applicants, a disproportionate number of the best applicants have parents who are small business owners.
Amen.
And it's so much about growing up with whatever you're around is normalized. So, you know, I always think the reason that so many entertainers and athletes have kids who become entertainers and athletes, it's not genetics so much as it is that was normal to them. Mm-hmm. Like, that was within the realm of possibility. When I grew up, I didn't personally know anyone who was a professional entertainer or athlete. So to me, that was like outside the realm of possibility. That was like, you know, fairy tale stuff. Oh, that's just not something that I can even think about. But whatever you see around you as sort of normal, you're going to see as possible. And entrepreneurs, small business owners, they have all these traits and attributes, and they've kind of demonstrated you can do things your own way. And kids who grow up seeing that as normal, they tend to be phenomenal fits in the program. They get it. They know how to think entrepreneurially. They know how to create value and think for themselves. So I think just by being an entrepreneur as a parent, you are doing something so valuable for your kids just in normalizing entrepreneurship for them, in normalizing a life where you kind of dictate, you know, your own terms and all the attributes that come with it. I think that example is so powerful.
Absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, I love what you just said, normalizing it, whatever you grow up around, it becomes normal. That can also go the other direction. unfortunately.
Exactly.
So that's, exactly. You know, why there are some members of my family who are not welcome in my house for that very reason.
And honestly, that was a big deciding factor for me in, you know, in thinking about quitting this great job, taking all this risk. You know, the first thing you think about when you have kids is like, well, I don't know if I can be an entrepreneur. I've got a family. I've got to think about them. I've got to feed them. I don't want to risk having us, you know, have to suffer all these things and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, certainly there's some risk there, but I think there's an untold risk. There's a greater risk. What if I don't go after the thing that I'm passionate about and don't do the thing I love, but instead resign myself to a job that does nothing for me and just kind of say, well, kids, I never really enjoyed my life, but I did it for you. There's a risk that I'm sending a signal to them that's going to do much more damage than us having to, you know, give up some material luxuries for a while or me having to be stressed or like there's a risk to them growing up. Yeah. Seeing somebody who's kind of soul dead. Mm-hmm. And I saw that when I worked in politics, especially people who just, they got used to the cushy vacation and 401k and they just sort of, they died long ago.
Yeah.
And I don't want to set that example for my kids. I'd rather risk a business and fail and have my kids see that than to see me say, well, I just won't do anything that I'm passionate about because, you know, I've got kids. Like, that's not what I want them to see.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's like saying, you know, we stayed together for you.
You
know, all those excuses and it's an excuse and power parents. Oh my gosh. I know there are some of you out there who are still on the fence and kind of rocking back and forth. That's the reason I ask that question. And Isaac, I ask usually all of my guests, if there's someone sitting out in the audience, rocking back and forth on the fence thinking, gosh, I really want to do this, but I'm not quite sure. I know there are lots of you out there doing that. That's the reason I asked that question. I've talked to you. And I know some of you have actually jumped over and started to go ahead and go with this because of some of the guests that we've had on this show. And if Isaac is not one of those people that is telling you, giving you the exact message you need to jump off that stinking fence and get moving, then I don't know what's going to. Because that right there, Isaac, that you just said, is the best motivation for any parent. And I am the example as well with my sons. You've all heard it already before. My oldest son is my podcast editor, and he's doing amazing things on his own, looking at his own business, helping other podcasters, all kinds of things. My youngest son is now doing animations. He's teaching. He's doing exactly what you do with younger young people. He's teaching himself how to animate using Adobe Animator and animating for me. For my business, taking some of the images that he's drawn and animating them and using them I get to use them in my funnels. And he comes to me all the time and asks me, so what else do you need? What else should I do? What else can I make? So that he's teaching himself how to do that and having the actual application, the practical application of it. He's got an amazing portfolio already just for me.
I love it.
So, that's huge. That's not because of me. That's not because I'm this amazing, wonderful, you know, of course I am, but you know, it's not because of that. It's because they see the possibilities. It's not because I'm pushing them or wanting them to do it or making them do anything. They see the possibilities.
Kids are natural learners. You have to make learning unfun in order for kids to stop wanting to do it. If you just leave a kid alone, you'll see. I mean, you've probably all heard I think it was a TED talk or something about, you know, putting this computer in this rural place in India and within like weeks, all these kids learn how to hack and all this stuff. Yep. It's all you need to do is present, get a resource rich environment, present resources, opportunities, you know, have a lot of books around the house, have, you know, the fact that you're sitting in your office doing a podcast while your kids are walking around, they see it, they overhear it, they have access to a lot of different ideas and possibilities. They'll do most of the work if you can kind of expose them to the world in a way that's not like, you ought to do this because it's good for you, because it's learning, but just in a natural way. Like when they see you doing it and you being genuinely interested and you reading books all the time and listening to podcasts and producing things, they'll say, I want that too. Versus when you try to like guilt them into, I remember my mom always used to say, you should take a small engine repair class. And the fact that she said I should made me so, never wanted to do it.
No way, man. Interest. Absolutely. instead of leaving small engine repair manuals around the house and reading them herself.
And contrast that to, she was always really interested in grammar and language, and she would do crossword puzzles and this kind of thing, and always very chatty, talking with all kinds of people, just a good verbal communicator. I was so interested in that. I started doing crossword puzzles. I loved, you know, language and all that stuff, because it was something she never tried to push. And again, it's not always that clear cut, but
of course,
just having that exposure is really, really key.
All right. So Isaac, I got to tell you, we are going to definitely have another conversation. We're going to invite you back on, and I would really like to, next time we chat, get into really the details of some of the things, if you're willing to do this, some of the things that you look for in a candidate, and what kind of attributes that you might look for. Because again, the audience, entrepreneurs, they're going to need these people. They're going to need to find some of this talent. And that is the number one thing that most entrepreneurs struggle with. That's the question I get most often. This challenge that I mentioned to you, one of the people in the audience, I did Facebook Lives every day for 5 days and had some specific skills that I taught. And on the last day, they were asking, so how do we find, because I have staff, how do we find people to work for us? What do we do? And that it's kind of like a black box. It's a scary thing, you know, because we've all heard the horror stories, or we might have even experienced the horror stories at the jobs that we've been in with the people that are just like, oh my gosh, that would be a nightmare employee. And so, you know, to come back and talk about some of those key areas to look for, and especially with the whole millennial idea of, you know, not being, you know, given trophies, whether they finished or not, or whether they did well or not, you know, that the whole, you know, attitude about the poor millennials and not,
yep.
When we start generalizing is when we get in trouble, definitely.
Well, it is a incredibly real pain point. A business owner friend of mine recently said he's looked through 1200 resumes this year and only found like 3 or 4 worth interviewing. It's a real pain point, but you're right. It's dangerous. It's too easy to fall into, let's just be a victim and say, millennials all stink. There's nobody good. It's too hard. These kids, they were all raised wrong. Whether or not that's true, that doesn't help you, that worldview. Right. And to rather say, okay, there's certainly opportunity to find somebody somehow. The people, everyone else is going to be what they're going to be. How can I learn to work with this? How can I find a way? Can I find those diamonds in the rough? Can I find the people who have a different, and we're kind of trying to make that easier. We're trying to say, look, if you just rely on a degree as a criteria for talent, it's not helping that much. I had the realization when I was in college, I looked around and I realized all I'm buying is a piece of paper that says I'm no worse than these other kids. And that's a pretty weak signal.
Oh
so,
my gosh.
I'd love to talk more in detail about that sometime.
Yeah. And then the next thing too, that all of a sudden popped in my mind as you were talking a couple of times ago, is, you know, to franchise this idea. Because for your business, I mean, I don't know what your business plans are, but really to go into certain areas, actual physical locations, in addition to online, and franchise this, because there are young people all over the world and they all need the same things that our young people do. And, or the young people that you've tapped into, and to really, when you talk about the word scaling, to really be able to have access, to have young people have access to this as an alternative. I envision, obviously, as you say, there, the government is on the I don't remember what the term you used, but, you know, they're lagging. So I know they're there, but I have a feeling, just like in healthcare, there are people out there making amazing, opportunities in healthcare.
Yes.
You know, I have a feeling, even though they lag behind, they might adopt this as another opportunity and another option other than just paying for everyone's education that they probably won't use. So, wow. I don't know if you have those ideas, but oh my goodness, I can only imagine that this opportunity is just golden. Power parents out there, obviously, if you need to get a hold of Isaac and find out more about what he's doing, we will have all of his connections, all of the places you can find him in the show notes for this show. And rest assured, Isaac and I will be talking once I hit stop on this record. we will be talking quite a bit more, I guarantee it. So I'm going to ask you that same question, and I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but what would you say to that person that's sitting out there on the fence and rocking back and forth and trying to go, gosh, I think I want to do this, but I'm not quite sure?
Yeah. That's, don't feel bad that you are in that spot first. Don't feel like, oh, I'm not cool because I have doubts and fears. And that's totally normal. That's totally healthy to feel that way. But I would say two things. One is that life is too short to be bored and to not give it a try if it's really calling to you. And two, something that my brother told me when I was thinking about this, he's a very successful entrepreneur himself. We are incredibly blessed at this point in the history of humanity, and especially if you're in the United States, that if you fail really, really bad, the bottom is not that far. I mean, the worst that I kind of just was like, what's the absolute worst that could happen? It's not that bad. Like I said, like if I had to live in my mom's basement for a little while, that's actually a better life than most people in most of human history. You know, that's like right. If I had to go work a couple jobs to make ends meet because the business that I tried failed and I burned through my savings and went into credit card debt of $50,000 or whatever, even if I had to declare bankruptcy, like these are not awful things by historical standards. This is actually an amazing time. The falling doesn't mean falling to your death. Even if your business utterly fails, you as a person, you don't fail at all. You accumulate amazing stories, interesting challenges, and it's rarely life and death here. And that's a really powerful thing to remember, because we build it up in our minds to feel like it's life and death. But if you've had somebody, you know, get a really terminally ill with cancer, or someone die in your family, those are the moments when you realize what you're afraid of with this business thing is really nothing to be afraid of. There are things that are so much more high risk, so much more important. And it's really not that big of a deal. So kind of embrace the worst possible outcome and think about it and say, if that happened, I could live. Okay. What's the worst that could happen? That's not too bad. Let's give it a shot.
Amen. Absolutely. Amen. Thank you so much, Isaac, for sharing this time with us. I very much appreciate your knowledge. The things that you're doing, I think, are an absolute benefit to our society, let alone our young people, and to all of us as entrepreneurs. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary Catherine. It's been an absolute blast.
To get powered up for your day, just go to parententrepreneurpower.com and listen to any one of the over 100 episodes we've had so far with amazing entrepreneurs just like you. It might just help you feel like a grown-up again.